questions on the last portion of chapter 5. Of course, chapter 5 has been discussing the subject of submission in the last paragraph, discussing the subject of the relationship of Christ and the church, illustrated by the relationship between husbands and wives. And as we look at the last, I'm going to put that somewhere, the last of the lesson sheets, Miss Jenny, what is the meaning of the word cleave? That works. That works. Bruce, if he was in here, I would use him to illustrate the point. Some time ago, I was using sticking two pieces of wood together with glue, and how that when you pull them apart, you damage both of them. And Bruce used, I think, a much better illustration as he talked about welding two pieces of metal together, that literally you have a blending of the two, and when you take them apart, then there is damage to both pieces. That's a good illustration. In verse 17, how is the husband to love his wife or his own wife, and how is the wife to treat her husband? John Grigowski. All right. Husbands love his wife as himself, and how is that? What is it that Christ did for the church? All right, he gave himself up. When we look at how a husband is to love his wife as himself, that involves two elements. What is it that he does? I'm picking on you. Pardon me? Nourish and cherish. That's right. And we talked about the meaning of those words as we were going through that. Now, in our study this morning, if you would please open your Bibles to Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 through 9, where we see another application, really, of the thought that is introduced for us in verse 21 of chapter 5. Verse 21 of chapter 5 introduces this concept of subjecting yourselves one to another. And I need somebody to read these first nine verses for me, please. Jenny, would you read that for me? Interesting reading. As we look at this text, again, it amplifies this idea of submission. Those who possess authority are also under authority. You remember a few weeks ago, I preached from Matthew chapter 8 and Luke chapter 7 regarding the centurion who had a servant that was very sick and about to die. And he sent word to Jesus by the elders of the Jews to come and to heal his servant. The elders of the Jews reported to Jesus that this man is worthy because he's built our synagogue and done things that make him worthy. And then this particular centurion sent friends. And these friends reported from the centurion that I am not worthy that you should come into my house. Just say the word. He said, I also am a man under authority. Now, a centurion ranks over how many? Soldiers. 100. The captain who would be over him would rule over how many soldiers? 1,000. That's right. Now this centurion is in the middle. He rules over 100, but he has a superior over him. Now our point in this is that all who possess authority are also under authority when we look at the illustrations that are given. Wives are under the authority of husbands. But husbands are under the authority of Christ. Children are under the authority of parents, but parents are under the authority of the Lord. Servants are under the authority of their masters, but the master is also under the authority of the Lord. Now, this principle is, of course, something that is amplified. Now, the willingness to submit oneself to another grows out of humility and respect. When we look in the Hebrew letter in the 12th chapter, we see this thought dealt with in relationship to the king of the kingdom as we think about those who are the subjects of the kingdom. In verse 28 of this text, it says, "Wherefore, receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken, let us have grace whereby we may offer service well-pleasing to God with reverence and awe. For our God is a consuming fire." As citizens in the kingdom, we have one who rules over us. And as we have one that rules over us, our attitude toward him, revealed in verse 28, reverence and awe, is a part of this commandment. Now, passages that we've studied already in previous classes, as we studied the book of Romans in particular, those who are citizens in a civil government, do we not have those who are over us? That requires humility and respect. In Romans chapter 13, what is God's divine order as we look at civil authority? Romans 13:1. All right, we're to subject ourselves to higher powers. Now, does the higher power to whom we subject ourselves also have a higher power? Indeed. So our attitude is that which is involved in this. And if we drop down in the text to the servant-master relationship, I want to make an application of that principle that I think, frankly, is a very legitimate application to the employer-employee relationship. In Colossians chapter 3 and in verse 22, there the writer says, "Servants, obey in all things them that are your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in singleness of heart, fearing the Lord. Whatsoever ye do, work heartily as unto the Lord, and not unto men." Now, we're going to talk about the application of these as we get just a little further along in our study, but you see the point we're emphasizing here is the attitude of the one who is to submit toward the one that he is to submit to. When we think of the relationship between the husband and wife, we see obviously in verse 22 of the text that we're studying, "Wives, be in subjection unto your own husbands as unto the Lord." But what attitude is she to have toward her husband that prompts that obedience or subjection? Verse 33, respect, reverence. Now, as we see that as a motivating factor, this ought not to be a problem in the home, ought not to be a problem in the workplace, ought not to be a problem with civil authority, and certainly ought not be a problem in our relationship to God. But now, Paul's point in this text that we're studying in Ephesians chapter 5 and 6, he said, subjecting yourselves one to another in the fear of Christ. Does that have application in our relationship to civil authority? Yes. Subjecting one to another in the fear of Christ. What about your boss? What about his boss? What about in the husband-wife relationship? Generally, you see, in our relationship one to another, this rule applies. The willingness to submit oneself, it grows out of humility and respect. In every aspect of God's order, that's so. Now, you obey God for that reason, don't you? You pay your income taxes for that reason, don't you? And we also see in the workplace, you have a work ethic for that reason. Wives in the home, in subjection because they reverence the role and the place that God has given their husband. That's a general principle that we see illustrated with this centurion up here. I am a man of authority. I understand that. I say to this one, do it, and he doeth it. Well, what did the chief captain have to expect out of the centurion? The same thing. Now, the chief captain, who did he subject himself to? The king. So we've got a line of authority that suggests not only submission, but willingness to submit. Now, I don't remember, frankly, if it was in this class or if I preached it up in Oregon. Sometimes my mind gets a little confused and mixed up when I have preached the same thing at two or three different places, who I said to what. But when we talk about the illustration of submission to authority, I know you've heard this illustration, if not in recent, you've heard it in times gone by, about the man who had the wagon and desired young men who would come to help him harvest his crops to cut the tongue out of the wagon. You've heard that, everybody, right? Oh, you haven't? Well, let me tell you about that man. There was a man during harvest season who desired help getting his crop into the barn. And he put a sign down by the road, help wanted. One young man came to apply for the job. He told the young man, I would like for you to take the axe and chop the tongue out of my wagon. The young man said, I don't understand why you want me to do that. It would render your wagon useless. You couldn't use it to bring in the crop. The man said, go on your way. I don't need you. Another man came and he gave him the same test. And he likewise argued, I don't understand why you want me to do that. You couldn't use your wagon. He said, go on your way. I don't need you. A third young man came and applied for the job. And he gave him the same test. And the young man replied, it's your axe and it's your wagon. And he went and chopped the tongue out of the wagon and came dragging the tongue of the wagon back to the house. And the landowner said, you've got the job. You're the man I've been looking for. You know how to take orders. Now, that's simply an illustration. This centurion understood this principle of taking orders. If he had given an order to a soldier under him, and the soldier said, you know, I don't understand the why. Why do you want me to do that? What did the soldier subject himself to during Roman times? A flogging or even death. Now let me ask you, you want to ask the centurion, why do you want me to do that? The centurion understood this principle. I have the authority to say to this man, go, and he goes. Don't argue with me, he just goes. He understands there's a penalty, he understands the authority that I have, and this centurion understood that in relationship to the chief captain. Can you imagine the chief captain giving orders to the centurion and the centurion wanting to negotiate the deal? Now that's what we see in this principle of subjection. The willingness to submit oneself to another grows out of humility and respect. If you're in the job place and your boss, John, says, I want you to do this. Are you in the position to take the time to negotiate with the boss, or is he the boss? He's the boss. All right, Ken? That's right. That's right. And we've got both sides of this. Now, the principle of submission that's taught in this passage requires willingness and humility and respect. And if we don't have both of those, then everything gets all out of sorts. Now, that's just the key of what he's writing about here. So, the point of these verses is to use a number of applications that suggests to us the proper use of authority and the humble obedience of the one who has been given authority by God to submit. Now, that's just what these verses are talking about, and it's what the previous verses have been talking about. And when Jesus discusses the husband-wife relationship, though there are many lessons to be learned, even as we discuss the parent-child relationship, the servant-master relationship, all of these, though there are many lessons to learn about them individually, What are they used to illustrate? Pardon me? Submission to authority, but in particular, the submission of the church to Christ's authority. That's what's being discussed in these verses. The submission of the church to Christ's authority. Now again, we can talk about husbands and wives, children and parents, servants and masters, but what does that help us to see? The relationship that the church has to its head, Christ. Now that's the lesson that we want to see in all of these illustrations. Now, if you don't have a humble, submissive attitude, what are you going to do in reference to Christ the head? You're going to want to negotiate the deal, you see. And just frankly, Christ is not in the business of negotiation. Doesn't he, like the centurion, have the right to say, do this, and expect us to do it, not to argue or to explain why we're not doing it? Now that gets us into all kinds of trouble. And I'll talk with you some individually, if you'd like, about the experience up in Oregon. This gives us trouble, and it gives God's people trouble. We want to negotiate. Express to God why I want to do this. Alright? Now in the text of Ephesians chapter 6, beginning in verse 1, children, obey your parents in the Lord. For this is right. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and that thou mayest live long on the earth. Children. Now we need to understand who they are. One of the discussions I had with a gentleman while I was away is that up until the age of 20, you're still considered to be a child. Now we're going to have to continue talking about that in some correspondence. But what I want you to see in this passage is that children are those who are under the care of their parents. Those who are under the care of their parents. Now we'll talk about an application of that that extends beyond that somewhat. But children, obey your parents. Here is a training process that takes place, and children are to be submissive in that training process. Now how do we know that? When we look into the Old Testament text, what happened to children who were rebellious during this time of training? Well, they were to be stoned to death. Turn back, if you will, to Deuteronomy chapter 21. Deuteronomy chapter 21. In Deuteronomy chapter 21, begin reading at verse 18. There it says, if a man have a rebellious or stubborn and rebellious son that will not obey the voice of his father or the voice of his mother, going to have more to talk about pertaining to that. It says, and though they chasten him, will not hearken unto them. Then shall his father and his mother lay hold on him and bring him out unto the elders of his city and unto the gate of his place, and they shall say unto the elders of his city, this our son is stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey our voice. He is a glutton and a drunkard. And all the men of his city shall stone him to death with stones. So shalt thou put away the evil from the midst of thee, and all Israel shall hear and fear. Now look carefully at that passage. Here is a rebellious son. He's living during this time of training, but he will not submit. That's described as rebellion. He will not submit. Notice the qualifying factor. Though they chasten him, he will not hearken unto them. Here are parents that, from the evidence of the text, seem to be responsible to train. Now, part of training is teaching, grant that. But a part of training is to show consequences if you don't. Now all of us have learned that. We know that there are consequences, that if we do not submit, there are consequences that are imposed. Now we see that in the parent-child relationship as is described in this text. But also we want to note that in relationship to God, in the parent-child relationship, it was to be understood there were consequences. Turn, if you will, to the New Testament, Romans chapter 1. Romans chapter 1. As Paul has described the condition of those who have rejected the knowledge of God, you'll note the idolatrous practices beginning in verse 21. In verse 28, we'll pick up the reading. Verse 28, there it says, "And even as they refused to have God in their knowledge, God gave them up unto a reprobate mind to do those things which are not fitting, being filled with all unrighteousness, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, malignity, whispers, backbiters, hateful to God, insolent, haughty, boastful, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents." Do you see that? And further it tells us that they who practice such things, verse 32, are worthy of death, not only do the same, but also consent with them that practice them. Disobedience to parents was one of the things that Paul said, the consequence, they're worthy of death. Do we see just how serious that is? Disobedience to parents. 2 Timothy 3, same thing. Now I want to qualify that as we get just a little further along down in this portion of the text. But children, be in obedience to parents. Now all of you who are children in the class this morning, you take note of that, being as we have so many. Pardon me? You're a child. Well, we'll have to talk about that. Okay. Children be disobedient, there are consequences. So we may have to talk about that. To do what? What are children to do? To obey. Now that's a simple expression. To hear under authority. Case in point. Luke chapter 6, verse 46. "Why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" Isn't that simple? What does God expect of us? Romans 10, same thing. To hearken unto His voice. That's what you do when you obey. You listen. You do what you're commanded to do. And the Hebrew or the Roman writer tells us that that's a demonstration of faith. Faith comes by hearing. But not everybody hearkens. Not everybody obeys. To hear with understanding and submission. That's what children are to do. Children obey parents. And then let's notice the condition and extent of the child's obedience. Children, obey your parents in the Lord. Now there's the qualification. All right, mom and dad, tell little Johnny, if you become a member of the Church of Christ, don't come home because you won't have a home to come to. What do you do? Children, obey your parents in the Lord. What do you do? All right, as long as you're following the Lord, then you've got to do that. The Apostle Peter in Acts chapter 5 said that we must obey God rather than men. This is not the first time we've come across that thought, is it? What if your employer demands something of you that puts you crossways with the Lord? Can't do that. What if your husband puts you crossways with the Lord? Can't do that. Now, we've talked about that in verse 22. Wives, be in subjection unto your own husbands as unto the Lord. But the parallel of that is seen in Colossians chapter 3, verse 18. Wives, be in subjection unto your husbands as is fitting in the Lord. Do we see the application of that? In the Lord. As long as what they require of you is fitting or consistent with what the Lord requires of you, then you have a responsibility. If that commandment goes outside of that circle, then you have a responsibility unto the Lord. Isn't that simple? But notice the extent of that. In all things, as we back up unto verse 22, wives, be in subjection unto your husbands as unto the Lord. Verse 24, but as the church is subject, or as unto the Lord, verse 24, but as the church is subject to Christ, So let the wives also be to their husbands in everything. We see the qualification and we see the extent. Turning to the Colossian letter once again. In Colossians chapter 3, in verse 20, he continues, "Children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing in the Lord." Now there's the qualification. Children, obey your parents in all things, except when it goes beyond what the Lord wants you to do. Isn't that simple? Now, children, why do you do that? Ephesians chapter 6. Well, why do you do that? Because it's right. That's right. Now, sometimes we see children that don't want to do what's right. And they're determined to negotiate with mom and dad. Now, where's there a problem with that? Negotiating with mom and dad. You didn't know my dad, did you? Maybe I didn't know yours. But do you negotiate with mom and dad? No, we don't do that. Now, as we see the application of this as parents, should we allow ourselves to be put into the position of negotiating? This centurion who understood, I say to this one, do that. Did the centurion have the right to expect that? Now, does that mean that the centurion could not ever look at the circumstances and reconsider? Well, sure he could. But he's not in the position of negotiating. Now, when you see the need of a child and that sort of thing, can you change your mind? But does that put you in the position to negotiate? Children are to be in subjection. The point is to obey. This writer says, for this is right. It's right. Now, we could talk about that at some length. But what we want to see, it's right. Why? Why is it right? Well, because that's what God said, brethren. See, that's not a hard question to answer. Our children need to be taught what God said. In our study up in Oregon, one of the points that I was trying to establish in the Bible class period on Sunday morning is the responsibility of parents toward children to help children to see God. If we're going to talk about lessons pertaining to authority, and that was the theme of the meeting, how can we teach children about authority if they don't understand who God is? Now, what was the purpose of the people of God, the Israelites, when they came into the promised land, crossing over the Jordan River, erecting the pillar of stones? What was that to accomplish? Just to have a pile of rock here to mark the place? All right, a reminder. And not just a reminder. It says, so that when your children may ask, what meaneth these stones? That you might do what? Say, well, that marks the place where we came in. You teach them who God is. When you observe the Passover, and your children and your children's children would ask the question, what meaneth this feast? What are you to do? Say, well, we ate this before we came out of Egypt. What do you do? You use that to teach them who God is so that those who are young might understand what is right. Now, am I missing that somewhere? Children, obey your parents and the Lord, for this is right. Now, there's another end of that. We talked about attitude. Why would children be submissive unto their parents? Well, let me ask you. You all are awful quiet this morning. Let's just suppose, Melissa, that you tell one of your girls to do this. Do you have the right to expect that? All right. Let's suppose that there's some question in their mind about whether they should do this. Would it be possible, now underscore that word, for you just to follow them around every moment of the day and whatever you said, just whack them over the head with a stick and make them do that? Would it be possible? Desirable? Why not? All right. Two or three things you said that are worthy of comment. She don't have the time. Well, that's right. Very few of us do. But you want them to learn to do that not only because it's right. You want them to learn to do that because of how they consider you. Now, you remember the chart that we started out with? If we're going to have submission, what has to exist? Do you see that? Willingness to submit. All right, I dare say if you follow them around with a club, they're going to be willing. But what does that grow out of? Humility and respect. All right.
And if you follow and examine what they teach you and do it, there's a good chance you may live a long time.
Yep. Yeah. That's where he's going with this. Yes.
If they tell you to go, 50 and 50, and you go 100 and 100, there's a chance that you might not live long.
That's right.
So much things in life. So, but that to me was a good qualifying verse. That
yes.
Along with the humility and respect.
Yes. It's got to start here. You're not going to obey if you don't have some humility and respect. Now, unless somebody follows you with a club like Melissa would. All right? Okay? So we see the point. Now then, children, honor your parents. Now that means father and mother. Verse 2, honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise. Let's go back to Exodus chapter 21. Exodus chapter 21, reading beginning at verse 15. And he that smiteth his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. I don't know if my dad knew that passage was in the Bible or not, but he understood the principle. Any of you ever think about, just think about hitting mom or dad? Why not? It wasn't right. And it would be a death wish. You see. It wasn't right. Now why did you understand it would be a death wish? Because you knew it wasn't right. You don't do that. Mom or dad had somewhere along the way instilled within you this respect that was necessary. Now let me see two things just here. You remember in Ecclesiastes chapter 12, where the writer is talking about the purpose of life. What is it? Fear God and keep His commandments. There was a time when my mind was a little bit mixed up on that. And I was hung up on this reverence and respect thing to think that we do what God says because of who He is. Reverence and respect. Now, is that the only reason why you do what God says? Pardon me? Fear. Paul said in 2 Corinthians 5, verse 11, knowing therefore the terror of the Lord, we persuade men. We know that God is a God of vengeance. We know that He has expended His wrath upon those who disobeyed Him, and we see examples of that. Now, children, honor your father and mother. Honor is what is commanded here. Reverence and respect is certainly a part of that. But it's kind of like an older preacher friend of mine said, I want my children to do what I tell them to do because they respect me and they want to give me honor. But if that don't work, I want them to fear the consequences if they don't. Now that's fact. Reverence and respect is what's discussed here. But if you go back to Deuteronomy 21, what would happen to you if you were a rebellious son and your mom and dad chastened you and you continued to rebel? You'd be stoned to death. And you would be afraid of that, would you not? Because that was the judgment of God. But our point here is to value them, to show respect and deference to them. And as we look at that, I want to turn to 1 Timothy chapter 5. 1 Timothy chapter 5. So many lessons to learn here. Beginning at verse 3. Honor widows that are widows indeed. But if any widow hath children or grandchildren, let them learn first to show piety toward their own family and to requite their parents, for this is acceptable in the sight of God. Now, as the thought continues to make a contrast between those who are widows and those who are widows indeed, verse 8 hammers, but if any provideth not for his own, and especially his own household, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Providing for your own, who might that include? Mom and dad, grandma and grandpa, you see. You take care of them. Now I understand, and the point is a valid point, that sometimes the need of grandma and grandpa or mom and dad might go beyond your ability to supply that. And so you might have to have some professional care to supply the needs of your parents or grandparents, and there's nothing dishonorable about that. But when we look at mom and dad, they're just old. And so we throw them under the bus. Somebody else take care of them. I'll pay you to do it. And we cast them aside and leave them in a lonely hour and don't visit them, don't provide for them. Have we obeyed this text? No, we haven't done that. We haven't done that. And that's something that we must see. Jesus' commentary on this is seen in the dispute that he had with the leaders of the Jews in Matthew chapter 15, where the Jews were commanding that he and his disciples wash their hands before they ate bread. And Jesus answered them in verse 3, "Why do ye also transgress the commandment of God because of your tradition? For God said, honor thy father and thy mother. And he that speaketh evil of father or mother, let him die the death. But ye say, whosoever shall say to his father or his mother, that wherewith thou mightest have been profited by me is given to God, he shall not honor his father. And ye have made void the word of God because of your tradition." Jesus calls them hypocrites. Do you see that? What have they done? What did they do, Ken? All right. You see, here we'll give this to God, but we won't take care of mom and dad, and we'll tell mom and dad that wherewith you might have been profited, that which we would have used to take care of you, we've given that to God. And so we're excused. No, not excused. You see, that's Jesus' commentary on taking care of mom and dad and showing respect and deference to them. Now, he said this is the first commandment with promise. Now, that always flags the attention of a lot of people as we consider the first commandment with promise. What is that? First commandment with promise. Well, that just is not clear in the minds of many. Some say it's the first commandment with the promise of blessing. We say, well, the Israelites then were promised the privilege of going into the promised land. Others say, well, you see, that's the fifth commandment, Richard, and what is that? All right, but if that's the fifth commandment, didn't all the commandments essentially have promises associated with them? None of them? All right, well, back up, if you will. Let's look just a little bit to the account in Deuteronomy chapter 4. In Deuteronomy chapter 4, in verse 40, I believe, is the verse that I'm looking for. It says, "And thou shalt keep his statutes and his commandments," look at how plural that is, "which I command thee this day, that it may go well with thee and with thy children after thee, and that thou mayest prolong thy days in the land which Jehovah thy God giveth thee forever." What would prolong the days of the children of Israel in the land of Israel? Just honoring father and mother? Or keeping all the commandments? All of them. You see, that backs up to the first one. Now, the first commandment, some say, is the specific promise. The second commandment had a specific promise. Now, what are we looking at with this expression, which is the first commandment with promise? Honor your father and mother and you'll live long. Well, yeah. But keep all of his commandments and live long in the land, the text tells us in the account of Deuteronomy. Now, I think Ken's point is a valid point that we need to look at carefully. Jenny?
Maybe it's because it's the first commandment you start learning as a child. That's the only one you can really grasp at the time, is that what mommy and daddy say or what you're supposed to do.
All right. Now, you grow up with that, don't you? And when you grow up with that, as Ken has pointed out, thou mayest live long. Now, we might look at that and say, well, I know a lot of rebellious young people that grew up and lived to a ripe old age. How do we explain that? Or here's somebody that honored father and mother and he died of a heart attack at 35. How do we explain that? Well, what we're looking at here is something, and I think Ken has got this nailed down. We're not looking at just something that's universal in its application. But if I listen to what mom and dad have to say, generally age provides wisdom. Generally, that's so. Now, if we listen to mom and dad, we're going to avoid a lot of the awful consequences that otherwise would have been imposed upon us if we neglected the teaching of mom and dad. Now, I think that's the lesson, at least the lesson that I glean from this. It's not something of just counting 1, 2, 3, 4. It's a matter of listening and subjecting yourself to that, and then you'll live longer. Now, if I've missed it, you can help me out on that, and I'll back up. But I think that's the thing that is instructed here. Listen to mom and dad. And when you do that, then you have hope of living longer than you otherwise would. First commandment with promise. Now, turn back with me, if you will, to the application of that in verse 4. In verse 4, the writer continues. I want to pass over that, and let's look at verse 4. In verse 4, in Psalms 127, a familiar text beginning at verse 3. John, would you read that for me? John Sorey is back there in the back. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4. Psalms 127, verse 3. Got my Bible open to Ephesians 6.
Verse 3. Lo, children are an heritage of the Lord, and the first fruit of the womb is His reward.
Through 5, please. All right, according to the writer, what are children supposed to be? All right, they're supposed to be a heritage of God. They're supposed to be a blessing. Happy is the man that has his quiver full of them. Now, when we look at Psalms 127, do you know of any children that are not? They don't make you happy. Do you? Why, sure you do. But here is a statement. Children are intended to be a blessing. Fathers need to start out that way and understanding that. When we take a small tree and plant it in your yard, what do you generally do to it? You water it, you take care of it. What else do you do to it? You nourish it. What else do you do to it? You babe it along. Ah! Do you sure enough? Now, that's the point, Linda, that I was looking for. Now, why do you put a stick up against a small tree? You don't put a stick up against a grown tree, do you? All right, you're training, you're shaping, you're formulating. Now, that tree is kind of like a child. The idea is that you're blessed. They're to make you happy. But there's this period of formation, a period of training. And I think that's what the writer is alluding to, or just frankly stating, in our text of Ephesians chapter 6. Ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath. I want to go past this slide and look at this one. We'll come back to it.
provoke not your children unto wrath. What's that mean? You ever known a parent that literally just picked at their child and picked at them and picked at them till they made them mad? Yeah. Well, is that right? We want the child to grow up giving honor and respect and obedience to a parent that sees as his goal in life to make his child mad. Or beat them down just to strip them to where they have no confidence in anything. Fathers are not to do that. They're to teach them, but they're not to arouse wrath and rage, exasperate, or create resentment. Now, I want to pause and talk about that. Now, when my dad was getting after me, there were some times when I didn't like that much. I may have even gotten mad at him. I may, from time to time, have felt a little bit of resentment. You ever done that? But now you better get over that, right? Why? Well, we're talking about chastisement. Chastisement. There's a difference in chastisement and provocation. We can read about chastisement and note that the Lord chastises His people, Hebrews chapter 12. But is it the intention of the Lord to just make you mad? What is it that chastisement is? Correction, teaching. There's a lesson to be learned. Paul said, that's not your job, fathers, just to make your kid mad. The purpose of that is to teach him. To teach him to obey you and to teach him to obey God. Now, the last thing that you want to do, as Donna has pointed out, is to cause him to be discouraged. Now, when I think of discouraged, Linda's tree, you ever, maybe you haven't out here because a tree is so valuable, but have you ever seen someone take a stick to a tree and just beat it up to the point that they've stripped all the little limbs off of it? You've never seen that? Well, we need to talk about that. There was a purpose why we did that, but it looks pretty sorry when you're through doing that. And you can do a child that way. You can just take a tree and just strip them of everything. Just beat them down. And they become discouraged to the point that the feeling is, I can't do anything right. Now, you don't want to take them there. In Colossians chapter 3 and verse 21, fathers, provoke not your children that they be not discouraged. Now, what does that suggest to us? When we think about discipline, there has to be a balance. Fairness, promptness, but also consistency. And we have to see that, or what's going to happen to little Johnny. You see, if we withhold chastisement, little Johnny's going to grow up thinking he can do anything. And under the law, he was to be stoned to death. Or we can use chastisement. And little Johnny learns that he can't get by with just anything. He has to obey and submit. But if we take a stick and just beat little Johnny, then what happens to him? He becomes discouraged, stripped down. Now, there's a balance in there that we have to learn. And the wisdom writer in the Proverbs, throughout the Proverbs, talks about that extensively. And Richard has pushed the buzzer, and we don't have time to talk about that. But I want you to be familiar with this text as we make further application of it in our study Wednesday night.